Window World is proud to present Kevin Keatsman Has Issues, simply the best for less at WindowsKansasCity.com.
As is always the case, we are shocked when the news breaks about the biggest celebrities involved in something tragic. This time, it's arguably the greatest golfer of all time, Tiger Woods, in a single car accident in suburban Los Angeles. A nearly 700-foot rollover that required emergency surgery for his legs with rods and pins, and it's not over yet. As we remember from the all-too-sad days after Chiefs linebacker Derek Thomas' car accident, infection is the big worry here. Tiger has open wounds, and they will require great care. Alex Smith needed 17 surgeries and 2 years to recover from his leg injury and the infections that followed. And as we know, Derek Thomas didn't make it. It's a miracle Tiger is alive, according to doctors, and he has a long battle ahead. Again, we were all just left stunned, and we hope and pray for a full recovery. Today on Kevin Keatsman Has Issues, a conversation with an old friend about his new career. Mike Thompson learned to forecast the weather on a Navy ship, and when they decided to broadcast the info to the entire crew, nobody else wanted to do the work in front of the camera and the microphone, so Mike did it. After the Navy, he was prepared for anchoring the weather on TV, and it led to a nearly four decades-long career, most of it in Kansas City, on KCTV and WDAF. Mike retired from television in 2019, and is now a conservative state senator in District 10 in Kansas, the Shawnee area. He's a meteorologist and a huge believer that humans can't really change the climate. A wonderful family man and just generally a great American, Mike talks with us about life, his career, and making Kansas a better place to live. It's brought to you by Elite Automation. Elite Automation designs and installs intelligent building systems that save you thousands of dollars in utilities. Whether you have a school, a church, an office building, you can make your building great again with Elite Automation. They retrofit your HVAC control system for maximized comfort and savings. What's your building costing you? Hey, make that money back with Elite Automation. 913-766-2188 and online at EliteAutomate.com. Roberts Robinson, Chevrolet Buick GMC in Excelsior Springs. Roberts Robinson's customers say, we just make it easy. Ask for Mike on the showroom floor or visit online and shop, click, drive at RobertsRobinson.com. I'm driving a GMC Denali right now, the unbelievable Sierra truck. They have the best trucks in the world at Roberts Robinson Chevrolet Buick GMC. The Silverados are there, the Sierra's there, the Canyon, the Colorado, you name it. You want a truck? Roberts Robinson is the place to go. Visit online at RobertsRobinson.com or the showroom in Excelsior Springs at Roberts Robinson Chevrolet Buick GMC. And Fry Orthodontics, 12 area locations for your convenience. Fry Ortho's first appointment is always free. If you want to perfect that smile for you or your teenager, give them a call at 469-9191 or schedule your first appointment at FryOrthodontics.com. At Fry Ortho, your smile is just the start. Mike Thompson is the Kevin Keatsman Has Issues conversation, a longtime friend and a great American. Hit it!
Sports, politics, life. Back 9 Development presents Kevin Keatsman Has Issues. Online at back9development.com.
Our conversations with an old friend and colleague who I worked with for several years at Channel 4 in Kansas City. He is one of the nicest people you ever meet. He is currently a senator in the Kansas State Senate, and he's doing great work for the people of Shawnee and surrounding areas. He is Republican Mike Thompson. Boy, that has a great ring to it, Mike. How are you, buddy?
I'm good, Kevin. It's good to hear from you. It really is.
Oh, you too.
I tell you, it's been too long. You know, we had a lot of fun at Fox One. We really did for a lot of years.
We did, and you and I never really talked politics like I used to do with Dave Helling or some of the other guys down there. Because I figured this out. I worked up in the newsroom. The sports department was kind of like part of the newsroom, and it was all liberals. And so I was stuck up there just fighting them, battling them all day, every day. And you were down in the weather center, and you were insulated from the whole damn thing.
I was. You know, to be honest, it would have been fun to be part of this conversation, but I was down in the hole just cranking away on weather graphics all the time. But, you know, I listened. I've been listening and reading and, you know, conservative stuff for years and years and years. I don't think I ever hid my views from anybody, but it's just, it never really came out while I was there too much. I would have some conversations with some people on occasion about stuff, and I think they probably disagreed with me rather intensely.
Right.
Probably the kind of stuff that you encountered up there all the time. But, you know, it's just, it's crazy. And, you know, just off on the side with Rush Limbaugh dying this week,
yeah.
That was a shock to me. It was this past week or so. It was terrible. I knew that was coming, and it was hard because that's a guy I've listened to for many, many years.
Man, so, me too. Anyhow. And we knew it was going to happen and then it wouldn't be long, but still when you heard it, it was just a giant gut punch. And I know that some folks in the state of Missouri that in the Senate and the House in Missouri want to do Rush Limbaugh Day every January 12th in the state of Missouri. I think that's a terrific idea. That's going to be really neat. But I'm curious if you knew early on. Okay, so you were in the Navy and you studied meteorology in the Navy, and we'll get into that maybe in a moment. When you first started in TV, did you feel like it was as liberal then as it was at the end of your career? Because I kind of feel like the whole thing has really shifted left. I mean, I knew it was maybe, you know, 60-40 or 70-30 liberals that I was working with when I was in television. But man, now it's just an amazing number. How did that happen?
I think it's more blatant now. I think it was always there from, you know, because I got into TV in the late 1970s, 79, 80, right around in that time period. And, you know, it was liberal then. It really was. And, but I think there was more discussion among the two, and it was a little more civil. Now I think it's become much more blatant. And, you know, we went from how many owners, so many different owners around the country. Now we're down to about eight. And so the dictates coming from Chicago, New York, and L.A. pretty much determine what you're seeing on your local news. They're getting huge amounts of pressure. I know we were in the weather getting a lot of pressure to get rid of any superfluous stuff and do a minute-and-a-half weathercast that was so formulaic that it was no fun anymore to do. But I think it's you're getting much more pressure from the corporate level on the general managers, and then it just trickles on down. And plus, I think the liberal bias has become so blatant. You try to push back against it, and it's tough. Because there were some things I would hear when I'm standing at the weather wall. You know, some reporters would the term climate change would roll off their tongue as if it were a fact.
Right.
And I would go up and try to challenge that between newscasts and say, hey, that stuff was wrong. We should either correct that or something before the 9 and 10 o'clock newscast. And rather than correct it, they would just kill the story. They didn't want to correct it. So it's something that it's been a very steady progression. There are still conservatives who work in the industry that we know. But I think that by and large, to keep their jobs are fairly quiet.
Yeah.
Thank goodness there's people like Tucker Carlson out there on the national level, but he's one of the few, really.
Well, no doubt. And it's a tough way to go because you are a really outcast minority in the workplace. And to be a little bit fair to the local television stations, I'll say this. If I'm going to get local news in Kansas City, Mike, if I live anywhere in the metro area, it's not the Star. Yeah. That's for sure. They're over the top now at this point. Their actual like reporting of stories is just completely slanted. I think for the most part, if you go to like Channel 4's website or 41 or 5 or 9 or whatever, if you go to their website or you watch their newscast, I still think they try most days to take the facts of a story and present it and keep political bias out of it. Now, if they start talking about Trump or something, maybe that's a little different. But I think by and large with local news, the TV local news does a pretty good job of trying to just give you the facts.
Yeah. The most frustrating thing to me was the climate change thing. I wanted to be able to educate people on it. And to be honest, they knew that was a political hot button. They did not want me to push back. And so it just rolled off the tongue. And it still does everywhere. You know, people are scared to death to say climate change caused by humans is not possible because most people don't understand climate. And it's been peddled as for so long as a fact that I think a lot of people, even common sense people, have their doubts. So that's been a trend that's really bothered me a lot. And we're making, and this goes to the political side of things, a lot of bad policies based on climate change. And people don't realize how dangerous it really is. So that was my biggest frustration. And I think they just avoid talking about it, to be honest. They'll just say, hey, because of climate change, Texas was out of power or whatever, you know. No, it wasn't climate change. It was a weather event that happened. And you remember 1989 when we were 23 degrees below zero here. That was colder than anything we had on this last thing. And yet they called this last thing historic. Right. So did the Weather Channel. So did everybody. So they always blow these weather events out of proportion and try to justify it as climate change. I saw Bill Gates on Fox News Sunday the other day, and you know he was incomprehensible making these climate change claims, and I'm just wanting to beat my head against the wall.
Well,
it just drives me nuts, Kevin.
I think it's important to remember that it started off as global warming. And so that didn't work for him, because then the temperature started to go the other way and they started to look silly. Yep. Al Gore once upon a time said we had 10 years left and the climate, we'd be gone. I mean, we hardly could survive. That was 30 years ago when he was saying that. So that didn't work either. The amazing thing to me about liberalism is they say this outrageous stuff, Mike, and there's no accountability. If we look back at so many things, and we can look back at a year's worth of COVID, there is absolutely no data out there that wearing a mask did anybody any good. The places where the mask mandates were the most severe have not done any better than anywhere else. There is no science on that. What we now know is about half the population has had COVID-19, most of whom didn't know they had it, and 150 million are going to be vaccinated by the end of March, and that's going to take care of it. I don't know why we can't go back on these people, or they control the media and big tech. What's amazing to me is the things that they say are proven over and over and over to be wrong, to be false, to just be flat out scare tactics and lies, and they're never held accountable for it.
No, that's exactly right. And yet, if we make one little error in our facts, which, you know, largely are absolutely true, they'll look for any little sliver of a crack in our facts, and it forces us to, in some ways it's a good thing, it forces us to really do our research and make sure that what we're putting out is 100% correct, but they easily discount that and constantly look at all the crazy stuff that's coming out from the other side on this stuff and purport that to be true. This mask thing is absolutely insane. And if you try to push back against it, I think they have found out how many people can be complicit through this whole thing. There's a much bigger agenda at work with this, but you're right about the mask. It's crazy.
Okay.
They don't work.
That's such an interesting point, because I do think it is about control. It's like, okay, this is a trial run. We scared these people so bad, they will do anything we tell them to do. Then we shame them so badly that in a social setting, they'll do what we tell them to do. Even if they're against doing it, we've learned they'll do it because, you know, they don't want to be outcast in a social setting. That's interesting, because you started in the Navy, and I'm going to guess, I was not in the military, that it was pretty structured and you did what you were told. You were controlled a little bit in the Navy. Yep. Is it anything like that? Because there are places like a football team, that's a great place to control your players and tell them what they can and can't do. But living your life under liberty and freedom in America is not a place to be told what to do all the time.
No, absolutely. You should be independent to make those decisions on your own. It's the same with the vaccines. You know, they want to try to mandate vaccines for people to travel, probably vaccines to even in the workplace in some case. It's a very, very dangerous precedent to set, because that changes the whole structure of our Constitution and our liberties. And we cannot allow that to stand. And this is, I think that's where they're trying to go. And they're using this opportunity to do it. And it frightens me a lot. It really does. Unfortunately, people are willing to give up, their liberty for a little bit of safety. And you have to have enough courage to say, no, we can't do that.
Well, I know that when we worked together, we discussed a little bit that you were in the Navy, but I don't know that I ever got into detail of what it was that you did. But your naval career led you to becoming a meteorologist on television. That's a pretty good trick. Yep. Take me back to how it all began. How'd you get into the Navy, and what did you do there?
Well, I got into the Navy because I was interested in meteorology, and I saw that as an opportunity. I didn't really have the money to go to college, and so I thought, well, I'll serve. So, you know, I tested out high enough, they actually tried to get me to go to the nuclear program. I qualified for any school that the Navy had, and they were trying to look for guys to go on subs, nuclear subs. But I was really set on learning meteorology, and so they sent me to their schools, and then I ended up on an aircraft carrier where we provided weather information and forecasts for the flight operations on the ship. And I was on board the ship and out at sea for about 3 years. And on board, when we were at sea, they had a little private closed-circuit television studio where at night we'd give news, weather, and sports. Well, none of the other guys from up in the weather center wanted to do that. And so I said, well, I'll go down and do it. And I mean, it was very informal. We'd throw pies at each other and just goof off. But beyond, you know, you do it for two or three. Seriously, it was a lot of fun. But it got me used to being in front of a camera. And so when I got out of the Navy in 1979, my wife was living back here in Kansas, and I had been in dry dock in Bayonne, New Jersey. And I get home, and she was tired of being there. She wanted to, you know, get out of her parents' hair. And so she said, what are you going to do? And I said, well, I don't know, maybe hang around here for a week or two. She said, no, Monday, you're going to go find a job. So I went down to Oklahoma City, and the first place I applied was a private weather forecasting firm. And the guy said, you know, we're looking for somebody to do weather on a TV station here in Oklahoma City. Said, do you think you could do it? And I said, well, yeah, probably. Well, they were looking for three positions. They'd already hired two. And so the next day, they took me over to one of the TV stations in town. They put me on the green screen, had me do a little weather for them just as an audition. And there were about five or six other guys there. And I beat them all out. And they had all had formal training in this stuff. But I'd had the time in front of camera. And so I was a little probably more at ease. And so they hired me. I'd been out of the Navy 4 or 5 days and landed on what it was at the time, KOKH TV down in Oklahoma City. And subsequently, that became Fox 25, I think it was, is now in Oklahoma City. But I was only there for about 6 months and then went across the street to the CBS station, which was KWTV, and worked with the legendary Gary England, who was actually in the movie Twister, and worked with Gary for a couple of years, went to Charlotte, North Carolina, NBC affiliate there, ended up in Kansas City in 1983 at Channel 5, and I was there for 9 years and then came over to Fox 4 when Dan Henry retired. Actually, at the time, it was WDAF-TV, you know, just the NBC affiliate, and then I got there, and for a very short time later, switched over to News Channel 4, and then to Fox 4 and Fox bought us. You remember all that transition. Yeah. But that was, I was in Kansas City for a total on the air of about 36 years.
Well,
so it was a good run. Took over from Dan Henry, which Dan was, you know, what a man. He was crazy.
Dan was just
a lot of fun.
Unbelievable. What a sweet man Dan Henry was. And you know, Mike, you have the one thing, and you probably didn't know this in the Navy or when you were first starting out, but we've been in broadcasting a long time, and you know this. You'll be humble and say thank you and maybe not want to talk about it, but you have something that I never had. There's a likability about Mike Thompson that doesn't exist with Kevin Kietzman. That's just the way it is. We're different people. We're different characters. We're both broadcasters, but you just always had this likability factor that was massive, and you spent 9 years at Channel 5, and as you're getting ready to go to Channel 4, it was like the Royals or the Chiefs free agency in the off season. It was like the biggest story in Kansas City was Mike Thompson was going from 5 to 4. What was that like? What was it like when Channel 4 came courting you to replace Dan Henry, and how did that all go down? That was like everybody in the city was talking about that. That was so big, Mike.
It was scary. You know, you get used to being one location, one place, and working with a bunch of people and coming over to 4 and, at first it was a little intimidating and a little hard. And I thought, gosh, I'm never going to replace Dan Henry. Everybody loved him. He was the funniest guy you'd ever know.
Yeah.
And so it was worrisome because I realized I would be leaving behind viewers that, you know, had gotten used to me over Channel 5. And now I had to win over all of Dan's folks. And I had the same thing at five because Fred Broski was there. Yeah. And then he wanted to get out of the Monday through Friday thing. So here I am replacing Fred. And then 9 years later, I'm trying to do the same with Dan, you know, as these guys move into a different transition of their life. And it was hard and it was a little bit scary, but I tell you what, I enjoyed working both places. I enjoyed everybody I worked with. I mean, there's very few people I can think of that I just didn't get along with. And so it was a great career. It really was. And I enjoyed it. I part of the thing is, I think I grew up in Southeast Kansas in a rural community. I never felt like I deserved to be on TV, to be honest. I was constantly amazed that I was there and doing what I did. And, because I grew up watching WIBW in Topeka, and I remember watching Bill Curtis do the Topeka tornado in 1966, and I was always amazed at that. I thought it would be neat to do that. And then I ended up doing it, you know, thanks to the fact my wife told me to go to Oklahoma City. Yeah. So, you know, that sort of opened the floodgates, though, because nobody had done that in a long time. I think Don Fortune might have done it, switched over stations at one time. Well, so after that happened, things kind of got jumbled up.
Yeah, every now and then somebody would get terminated and wind up somewhere else, which is a totally different deal. How did they land you? Did Channel 4 call you? Was your contract coming up? Did you have an agent that called them? How did this actually happen? Because I'm going to guess it was pretty lucrative for you.
Well, my contract was coming up, and Ed Piette, who you probably remember, the general manager, had just started over at Channel 4. And he got in contact with me through Mike McDonald. And Mike took me to lunch one day, and he said, he told me that Dan wanted to retire and I was very humbled by this fact that Dan wanted me to thought that I'd be a good person to step in. And, I felt like things were kind of stagnating at five at the time from what I was doing. I liked everybody. Wasn't about that, but I told Ed that I wanted to do some more things and
it was nice to be wanted.
It was nice to be wanted. And I think he even challenged me to, we need to step things up. And I thought, here's an opportunity. It's a little scary, but you get presented with this and you decide, okay, here's something I need to do. And so, I came back and I talked to my wife about it and she said, well, if you think this is the right move, and I did. And, I got a bump in pay. It wasn't massive, but it was, I think more it was kind of maybe to get me out of what I felt was kind of a stale direction. And to be honest, things worked out well because they gave me the latitude to create School Day at the K, which turned into 20 years of a massive show that turned out to be phenomenal. And I worked really hard on that, and I don't know that I would have ever thought to do that at Channel 5. So there's a lot of things that worked out very well. And I just think God kind of puts you in these positions for a reason. And you don't always see it until after the fact. And you look back and go, oh, okay. That's why I was supposed to go there. And I kind of feel the same way with my Senate situation too. But that's a whole different conversation.
So is television completely behind you? If they called you, you wouldn't go back. You're working on something private with Weather. I know, a private business, and now you're working obviously in the Kansas State Senate. That's passed. You've moved on to other things. You'd never go back.
Yeah, I felt like the last few years that I was in TV, television news was going in a direction I didn't really like. And the same with the Weather. They're putting so much restriction on what, I like to tell people what's going on. I like to look at the big picture. I like to explain things. I like to teach. And they just didn't want any of that. They wanted it to be very dry, the weathercast to be so short and no personality. And I like to goof off a little bit. So I did not like it. And, you know, so this opportunity to get out came up and I decided to take that, not knowing, I mean, you talk about scary, that's frightening. The opportunity for the Senate thing came up and, you know, financially it's frightening too.
Yeah.
So you decide, okay, you know what? Life presents you with turns and twists and let's see what's on the next
time to go.
Horizon.
Yeah.
Time to go. So, and I think you've done that too,
yes.
You know, and it's not, you know, you get out of your comfort zone a little bit and you go, well, let's see what we can do. And so it kind of reinvigorates you a little bit
and keeps
you up nights a little bit. And, you know,
it's amazing. So, I'm totally reinvigorated.
Yeah.
And I'm doing what I love doing. I get to do every day on the podcast what I want to do on the podcast. And I'm so blessed
that
people are listening and downloading. And I've got sponsors and the thing's working. I couldn't even imagine it would be this successful. And I've only been doing it for 5 months. So if I have a little extra time, you're in District 10, which is right next to me. You're in Shawnee. I'm in Lenexa. So is this District 9 that I'm in right next to you? I think that's right.
You're either nine or eleven.
Nine or eleven.
I have a hard time keeping track of them all.
If I run and win, can we carpool?
Yeah.
And if we do, don't we save the state money if we do that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you'd love it too. I tell you, Kevin, I think you'd be a great senator. You really would, because you can articulate things very well and there's a learning curve to this. My first session, which was last year, you have to kind of learn the lay of the land, you know, how the rules operate, how these debates operate, what you can do and what you can't do, things like that. Once you get past that, once I got over that little hump, I felt very comfortable, and I feel very comfortable this year. So to the point where I'm a committee chairman, I'm carrying bills on the floor where you have to push for this bill and why you believe it and explain it in the debate. And, you could do it.
I don't know if I want to run is the thing. Here's the thing. Here's my problem. Again, you're the likable guy. And I assume that when you first, you know, are there, you get to give your first speech of some sort in front of the body. You've spoken in front of the body, right? At some point and met the group.
Yeah.
So my problem would be, my first day, I would say, my fellow Democrats, my name is Kevin Keatsman. I'm from Lenexa, Kansas, and I do not negotiate with terrorists. That's what I would say to him. So we would have a problem right from the jump if I was there, Mark.
Oh, well, they already know coming in. They already know coming in. I guarantee you, they knew coming in what they were getting with me, even though I'm not as vociferous. But, you know, you're an unknown when you first come in.
Yeah, sure.
Even if you have a very strong stance, you're a little bit of an unknown. They don't know what you're going to do. And, you know, the beauty of that first session is you get to kind of test people out and see who you can trust, who you can't trust, who you can work with and who you can't. And then you know, those people that you can trust, you can rely on, because there's so much stuff coming through there. It's a very high volume. It's like the old fire hose thing. You can't possibly keep up with all the bills that are coming through. And so like in my committee, we deal with a certain number of bills and we do the deep dive on those bills, and then they come out. And if they get, you know, you got to go through the Senate president, and then if he decides, he and the majority leader, that it's going to go to the floor, then, you know, then you have a chance to present it in front of the entire body and see if you can get it passed. And then, of course, it has to go to the House. Then it can end up in conference committees. There's all sorts of different things that can happen to a bill. But there's so many other bills coming through that you have to rely on the people you trust to say, hey, what's this bill 333? Is it any good, or what do I need to look out for? And so it's a bit of a team sport. It really is.
Yeah.
You can't do it all on your own.
No, for sure.
But that's the interesting part about it, because you get to know some very good people, some very smart people, and it helps. It's kind of like going to college, you know, because you're reading all the time and trying to make quick decisions. And that's probably my biggest thing, is the decision-making process doesn't allow you a lot of time to vet some of the stuff that's going through. And that worries me a little bit because I think that's how you get some bad stuff, some bad legislation.
Right.
And then later on you find out what it's doing. Yeah.
It's like Pelosi said a few years ago, let's get the thing signed and then we'll read what's in it. That's what she said years ago. I know.
And you think, how could anybody do that? But that's how some of those people think.
That's crazy.
Seriously. Oh, don't pay attention to this. It's going to be fine. And they go, no.
Right.
You know, and there's enough people who go, yeah, no big deal. And it just, you just, you're incredulous.
Yeah.
Back there and shake your head and go, what in the devil are we doing?
So where are we in Kansas on sports wagering and where do you stand?
We started to hear that bill last year and it died because of the COVID thing. I don't even know if it's back in the pipeline yet, with that. I had some trouble with some of the stuff that they were doing, last year. And to be honest, I can't off the top of my head, can't remember all of the details of that bill because it was a very big bill.
Right.
We own the state casinos here. I need to do a little more deep dive on the sports wagering thing.
But if the bill was clean and proper and you liked the bill, you'd be for sports wagering?
If the bill was clean and proper, and if I thought it didn't do anything that was going to be problematic for us, yeah.
Right.
I mean, you have to weigh everything on its merits.
Right, but things used to get stopped in Kansas because people had a moral compass that said gambling is wrong. But we can bet on anything in Kansas except sports, basically, right?
Yeah, right.
So what's the difference?
Exactly.
So, okay, yeah. So you're good with it.
That's a good point. And, you know, I think we had a bill last year, and this one bothered me, and this one was where these student athletes could get endorsements and get extra pay, you know, from the universities basically to come. And the argument was that, well, they're doing it in these other states and we're not going to attract the top athletes here to Kansas and stuff like that. But the schools in Kansas have problems. They just do. And I had problems with that because I thought, you know, your average student who is there to be a good scholar is getting left behind. I understand these athletes make a lot of money for the universities and stuff. And that was a bill that I had concerns with, and I don't think it didn't make it through.
Well, I'm with you because I think state by state it would just become an arms race, and I don't think the taxpayers have any business in paying athletes to play a sport at a college that belongs with the private corporations that raise money at these schools. They've got millionaires and billionaires supporting all these programs. And if they want to pay them somehow, I agree with you. It shouldn't, but you know what? Most things I don't think should come from the taxpayers. Just as a personal stance, I think the government pays for way too much stuff that the government shouldn't be paying for.
And there's a lot of that. And, you know, there's probably so much waste I know there's a lot of waste in a lot of these programs, and you're 100% right. Everybody's coming with their hand out. They all want some special dispensation to be able to get a tax break or a little subsidy here or subsidy there. But every time you do that, it distorts the supply-demand curve in that particular industry, and then you create problems that you don't anticipate. And that's what you're constantly battling against there. You're trying to say, okay, does the state really have a role here? Or is that something that can be handled at a much lower level than the state? And in most cases, I think it is. We've got all sorts of bills like that flying through. And it's problematic.
Yeah. What percentage of the vote did you get?
I got, what was it? In the general election, it was 52%.
52.
I'll tell you, in the primary, I won 73%.
Right.
To 73 to 27, but in the general, you know, there are areas up here that are turning more and more blue.
Okay, is that happening all over the state? Is it getting harder for Republicans to win local elections?
It's getting harder up here in this metro area, and over toward Douglas County, and you know, and the counties right up here in northeast Kansas. As it becomes more urban, you know, these counties grow and people move in. it's getting much more difficult. And social media is a big deal. The money spent on these campaigns are enormous. I had a lot of money spent against me for a number of different reasons. And in fact, I was outspent 3-1, but I walked about 1,082 miles. I knocked on doors for months, and it was hard. It was hard work. I was, wow. I lost a bunch of weight because there's a lot of hills up here in my district. So it was hard work.
The hardest part has to be, how do you make the 48% happy? Is there, how do you get through to them during your term that, hey, I'm helping you too? What's the key in politics to having those people know that you're not out there to get them?
Communication, I think. Now, there's some people you're never going to convince. Right. They're just a hard, probably 35% that you're just never going to convince them. You know, if you've got R behind your name, they just think you're pretty much Satan. Yeah. and that's the worst thing you could possibly be. And you try to talk common sense. You try to say, hey, you know, I'm trying to look out for you. I'm trying to do something that's going to make this state a place where your kids can afford to live. You know, it's not looking at what's happening now. It's looking down the pike. You know, we are losing population in this state. We're losing businesses in this state. And whenever you shrink the population, you increase the cost of living here. And we have some of the highest taxes in the nation. The combination of property tax and sales tax and income tax in the state, I think we're in the top three in the United States. So we have a very, very bad business climate. We need to fix some of those problems. It's a bad economic climate for retirees. We need people to be able to stay here in the state. And to fix those problems, we need to cut spending. And, you know, right now, that's a very tough thing to get people to do. They just keep coming to the till and saying, well, and this COVID thing has exacerbated it because so many businesses went out of business. So many people are unemployment right now. We had $1 billion sitting in the unemployment trust fund on the day that we shut down last week. Because I went to the state budget director. I said, how much money do we have for these unemployed people? He said, well, we got just under $1 billion. And I thought, oh, that's not going to be enough. And it's going to go negative here very shortly. So I knew we were in big trouble back then. And yet, the projected spending for next fiscal year is above this fiscal year's spending because they're somehow magically saying we're going to have all this money, but I don't see where it's going to come from. Yeah. You know, everybody is hunkered down, and I get hundreds of emails a day from people who need help with unemployment. So, you know, we're spending money to try to keep people afloat here, and we're sitting on $3 billion of unencumbered funds in the schools. So we could, you know, if the state Supreme Court didn't have a lock on that money, we could fix some budget problems with the education budget and still have room to spare. But well, boy, how you don't want to, that's the third rail. That's the economic, that's the political third rail. You will get shocked by trying to go after that money.
We're about 19 months away from being able to bounce the governor out on her keister. How do we do this? And B, if the gubernatorial election wasn't in an off year, could a Democrat ever win? I mean, why isn't the governor voted on the same year as the president? And can we fix that?
That's in Constitution. So we'd have to do a constitutional amendment to fix that one.
Great. Let's get control of everything. And let's get Jeff Collier in there as governor in 2 years. And he can say, look, I'll run for reelection in 2 years instead of four. Let's go ahead and change the rules and I'll run right now. And if you could pass it through the House and the Senate and the governor's on board with it, he'd shorten his term and run. Wouldn't that be great for Kansas if we voted for governor the year that we voted for president?
I think it would be very good. And it would be more appropriate. And, you know, that's what it takes. You've got to have
control.
You know, we've got the House. We've got the House. We've got the Senate. We've got override veto. We've got the majority in both. So we can get things through, but it's just a process because, you know, she'll veto a lot of stuff. But you're exactly right. And I think this economic situation and particularly the Department of Labor situation with all the problems they've had, they're going to be, that's going to be some headwinds for this governor coming up in this next deal. You know, I just hope that we don't have so many people running for governor on our side that it, they cannibalize each other the way we've seen in the past. We need to get behind somebody who is very strong and get them in there and start doing some good things.
Well, Jeff Collier's probably going to run. Do you know anybody else that's going to run?
I suspect the Attorney General will run, Derek Schmidt. Mm-hmm.
Not Mike Thompson.
We've heard. No. Don't want that. I've heard in back channels that Mike Pompeo might.
Oh. Wow.
Which would be interesting. I don't know if he wants it, but I think there have been some people talking to him. There might be somebody out of Wichita, the former Senate president. Okay. I think is thinking about it. That's Susan Weigel. I don't know who else. I know there might be even as many as five.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see. You know, I hope they can all get on the same page and not just tear each other apart and then a weakened candidate comes out against Laura Kelly. So it's going to be very interesting to see how this thing plays out.
Sharp claws and sharp teeth against Governor Kelly. That's all I'm calling for. I don't ask for much. That's all I want is get that thing done. So, Mike, this has really been fun, man. I may call you from time to time as things come up in Kansas. This is, it's really been great catching up with you. And I cannot tell you how much I respect your career and your body of work in television and the Navy before that. Everybody listening, thanks you for your service in the Navy and now your service again as a state senator from Shawnee. It's just, you've had an amazing life, an amazing run, and a very public life, and everybody knows about you, and I know that's not always easy. You've always handled it well. You're incredibly likable, even for those that may be liberals that don't like your politics. They still like your smile, and they like your personality, and I just say congratulations on a great job well done, and whatever you'd like to do in the future, we all wish you the very, very best.
Oh, Kevin, I appreciate that. And call me anytime. Seriously. This is a lot of fun. It's good to have a chat with old friends from TV, and you've done the same thing. I mean, I think life presents you with opportunities, and you just can't be timid. You have to say, you know what? Here's the chance that I want to take, and just go do it. And, life is amazing. It really is. I appreciate you having me on. I do a lot.
Thank you so much. All the best to you, Mike. Appreciate you.
You too, Kevin. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to Kevin Keatsman Has Issues. For additional VIP-only podcasts, live streaming of breaking news, sports wagering tips from the experts, and in-person special events, visit kkhasissues.com and become a patron for as little as $5 per month.
This has been a production of Crooked Tail Media Incorporated.